Drew, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Nathan. How are you?
I'm doing well. We'll get this call started here in just a moment. We appreciate everyone joining us today. We'll begin with a brief update from the governor's office from Drew Christie, and then I'll turn it over to Brian Myers with Dogwood Health Trust. And then we'll have representatives from the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners and the North Carolina League of Municipalities. We also have several state legislators on the call. So we thank everyone for joining us. We still have folks joining the call. And before we get started, just want to remind everyone that this call is being recorded. So we now have an archive of these calls on the Land of Sky website. So you can go and see the archive of the call last week with U.S. Senator Tom Tillis and North Carolina State Health Director Dr. Betsy Tilson, and that's available on our website at landofsky.org. If you have any questions during the call, please submit those on the chat box, and we will try to get to those if possible. If you're joining via phone and cannot access a chat box, you can also email Nathan at landofsky.org with any questions that you may have. We appreciate, again, everyone for joining us. I hope these calls are productive to you, and we'll try not to take any more of your time. We anticipate this call will last 1 hour. So we'll begin with Drew Christie with Governor Cooper's office. And Drew, if you could give us an update from Governor Cooper.
Sure. Thank you, Nathan. And thank you, Land of Sky Regional Council, and everybody that's attending this call for being proactive and trying to stay involved with what's going on. So I just want to bring some notes. And the governor did cover this highlight from the governor's press conference yesterday, but I feel it's important repeating again. So because of the stay-at-home and social distancing orders in place, our efforts to flatten the curve and save lives are working. But we know we cannot stay home forever. As the state considers how and when to ease restrictions, there are three important pieces to consider: testing, tracing, and trends. So as for testing, we need a major increase in testing capabilities to isolate and track new cases of COVID-19. This means having the supplies and lab capacity to do more diagnostic testing, as well as reliable antibody testing that can tell us who may have experienced mild or asymptomatic illnesses and now has recovered. Tracing. We have to boost our public health workforce to trace and track new cases of COVID-19. Contact tracing can be effective in containing new outbreaks, but it requires a lot of people and a lot of legwork. When a new positive case pops up, the tracing efforts will work to identify people who have been in contact so that they can be tested and take the right precautions. And trends. In order to ease restrictions, we have to see COVID-19 trends moving in the right direction. This includes trends in the number of new positive cases, hospitalizations, deaths, and as well as the availability of supplies of personal protective equipment, hospital capacity, and more. Any easing of restrictions will still have to protect the most vulnerable, people over 65, those with underlying conditions, and residents of congregate living facilities. You can find more resources. The state has created a new portal to find all of these resources for COVID-19, and that website is nc.gov/COVID-19. And I'll put that in the chat box as well for people to have it. But there's statistics on there. There's links to NCDHHS as well as unemployment insurance questions, small business questions. It's kind of a one-stop shop for everybody. So Nathan, with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Drew, for that update. And you can, again, place that information in the chat box for the new portal that the state has released. And if anyone has any questions for the governor's office, you're welcome to place that in the group chat. I'll now turn it over to Brian Myers with Dogwood Health Trust. Brian, thank you for joining us. We know Dogwood has made Herculean efforts to try to respond to this crisis, and we thank everyone at Dogwood, all the work of you and your team to help meet the needs of our local governments and our region. So I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Nathan, and thanks everybody for all the work that the whole community and region is doing with response to this. So just to start out, Dogwood Health Trust is driven by its values in diversity, equity, and inclusion, a focus on health equity. And we have committed $10 million towards strategic responses to COVID-19. We've also, I'm sure many of you heard, it closed earlier this morning, provided some bridge funding, backstop funding towards small businesses and nonprofits for the SBA PPP funding. We're always ensuring that our investments are equitably invested across the region, which is 18 counties and the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians. That's many sectors, many partners from K-12, early education, all the way up through seniors. So you can imagine there's a lot of need, a lot of great partners out there. We've essentially divided it out into five key strategies. So strategy one is reduce transmission to flatten the curve. A couple of examples is providing testing for aggressive contact tracing in partnership with rural and tribal public health and healthcare. Also a media campaign to inform and translating it into Spanish language. Two is preparing the region. So assessing the need with partners on personal protective equipment and working to acquire some equipment. As well as partnering with local companies for regional production of personal protective equipment. The third general strategy is mitigating the social impact. So this is kind of the around the bend, what's it going to look like? One example is providing cellular Wi-Fi devices to rural, especially focused on graduating seniors, high school seniors this year. And preparing advanced meals, helping a partner prepare advanced meals for the region for no contact drop-offs. The fourth strategy is collaborating with other funders. So the Community Foundation, Western North Carolina Community Foundation, has taken a great lead on creating their fund, the Rapid Response Fund. We've also partnered with the Legacy Foundations on various opportunities. The One Buncombe Fund, and some support to United Way 211, particularly so they could work remotely safely. The fifth area is the bridge funding until emergency funds flow. We've been looking at supporting health clinics who are actually quite ahead of the application process, which was great. Nonprofits, as I said, and small businesses with a particular focus on ensuring access by rural, minority and women-led businesses. So it's a lot of things I just put into five quick bullets. So thank you for your time and all of your partnership out there. And thanks for the airtime, Nathan.
You're welcome, Brian. We have a lot of our local governments and other partners on this call. If you were looking right now and saying, you know, where's our biggest gap? Where's the biggest need? What's a few things that we really need to focus on? Challenges that are really tough to take on. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the immediate need that's always a concern is what keeps popping up in daily news threads around the country, which is long-term care facilities. How do we support them? How do we get them the training that's needed before to prevent an outbreak? How do we help them support their, especially for assisted living facilities, they're not skilled nursing. What resources do they need? What supports do they need? That would be one way. Another, I saw the state kind of shifted a little bit in its testing So hopefully more testing is coming online. I think testing and contact tracing fairly aggressively beyond the first generation is pretty important to track where we know infections are and keep those folks safe. And goodness, you know, the economic impact, I think you guys are all well more versed in it than I am, but this is going to be a long run for the region that's primarily tourism based. So partners that have ideas on how to best mitigate, how do we flatten the economic impact curve for what's around the bend?
Brian, on the testing part, is it just there's a lack of ability to do wide scale testing because, you know, the right now it's limited to, you know, people that are showing certain symptoms and meet a certain protocol. So from a timeline, how long do you think it will be before we're able to do a larger scale testing?
Yeah, so we're working with partners. The testing that we're able to try and acquire comes from a variety of sources. It's the new EUA approval. I forget what that stands for. It's like emergency authorization use. For some of these quicker tests, LabCorp is pretty backed up with their testing right now and their ability, but I've heard they're coming back online. You know, capacity for PPE for folks to be able to test safely is a struggle, and that limits people's ability to test. There are new tests that are somewhere in the world, hopefully on an airplane heading to our region soon. I have no idea. And the capacity would still be fairly small, so making that larger for these new saliva-like tests, which limits the PPE that folks need to use. So, you know, there's daily more and more stuff coming online, and the more that we could support kind of more, you know, ideally regionally focused, but, you know, statewide focused or, you know, the greater southeastern region of production of this, so that it's not a short-term need for the testing. It's going to be a long-term need. You know, when you think about when travel starts opening up again, will you have to get tested and prove that you don't have it in the same way that we get malaria vaccines?
Well, thank you so much for that. And, you know, if you can hang on for the call for a while, we would greatly appreciate that. I understand you're incredibly busy, but again, we thank you for sharing the work of Dogwood. And if anyone has any questions for Dogwood, they could place those in the group chat or email me at nathan@landosky.org, and I will try to share those either on this call or later. So thank you so much, Brian. I'd like to now turn the call over to Kevin Leonard, Executive Director with the North Carolina County Commissioners Association, Paige Worsham with the County Commissioners Association, she's the Associate General Counsel. We also have Addison McDowell and Jennifer Cohen with the North Carolina League of Municipalities. So we're going to try to unmute all of y'all at the same time to let y'all share what you're working on to support our local governments. We know they're facing significant revenue shortfalls as the economy has come to a standstill, and we appreciate your advocacy on their behalf. So, Kevin, are you available?
Can you hear me, Nathan?
Yeah. I can. Great. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for having us on the call today. We really appreciate it, and we really appreciate all that you and everyone who's on the call are doing on the front lines of this. It's actually just great to see people and see you guys out in Western North Carolina and to have this opportunity to personally say thanks to you and all you're doing. Frankly, I'm just excited that I was able to put this really cool background today. And I figured that out. Usually my colleague said I needed to do something more professional, like with our seal. I just have pictures of like dinosaurs chasing me or something like that. So this is a little bit more professional for you guys for today. So my hope is to give you a broad perspective of the things that we're working on at the association as it relates to COVID-19 response and from a state and federal level. And then I want to turn it over to Paige Worsham to try to dig into some of the numbers or some of the preview on the budget and revenue side of things, which is admittedly not too clear. I see a number of members of the state house on and the leaders in the General Assembly on this call, and I really appreciate them taking the time to be on the call as well. And they're grappling with the same things at the state level in terms of the uncertainties as it relates to the funding that's coming in. Just from an operational standpoint, I'll tell you that the association has been hosting calls with our county managers every Tuesday at noon. And that's primarily to work the problem, work the emergency management side of this thing and issue spot things and relay as much information as we can. Nathan, like you're doing here, just communication has proven to be a critical part of this disaster or crisis, is just keeping everybody informed. And this is great that we're able to do it via video. I'm sure that the league, our partners over at the league, are going to have similar things to say about reporting to the General Assembly. Amber Harris, our Director of Government Relations, has presented before the new committees that the House has stood up, as we've made a lot of information available to members of the House and the Senate about what the needs are at the county level. Not surprisingly, it's things you already know, you've already talked about. The need for PPE, the issues related to personnel leave, regulatory reform types of things such as that. We're starting to think of it in my mind is really three buckets we're looking at. One is revenue and budget issues, making sure that there's stabilization in our county budgets. We're very concerned about sales tax, as I know everybody is. Number two is regulatory reform types of issues, deadlines, the things that you are just really weird unintended consequences of this. We're hearing from our members about, is there a way to extend our budget deadlines because of these issues and the uncertainty in the revenue projections. And the fourth thing is economic development, helping our small businesses, whether it's through county operated bridge loan programs for small businesses, which some counties are doing that, or whether it's thinking even more broader than that in terms of one of our primary objectives is school construction, has been for a long time, talking about whether that is an economic development package to try to get funding for through a bond or something for our building of schools. But even more pronounced now is the need for virtual connectivity and broadband and connecting the kids to the internet so that they can learn from home. So that's something that we're focusing on. My last pitch before I turn it over to Paige is an alert that we sent out yesterday to all of our members statewide. Some of you may have already received it, but right now, today, and the rest of this week, Congress is actually drafting the legislation for what we hope is going to be the fourth package. And why this is so critically important is they're discussing specifically right now funding to the state governments and to the local governments in what would be help to replace lost revenue. This is a little weedy here, but I think it's really important to spend this time with you to understand that in the third package in CARES Act, the funding that was in the state and local stabilization program, so you hear a number of $4 billion coming to the state of North Carolina. Of that, about 45% is dedicated to local governments. But it's almost like FEMA money, and it has to be tracked and reimbursed. But none of that money, the Treasury guidance is saying that none of that money is for the replacement of lost revenue. And so we're working really hard right now. I know the league is doing it as well, pushing on our federal delegation to amend that language and also provide additional funding for lost revenue, which is going to be significant, we anticipate. So if you have any influence at this moment in time to work with your federal partners and push on this particular matter, now is the time to do that, because that is going to dictate how the state reacts to helping with these lost revenues at the local level. With that, I'll turn it over to Paige. I hope I didn't steal too much of your thunder, Paige. But Paige has written this excellent document. I'm going to link it and put it in the chat box if I can figure out how to do that. And you can have access to it while she's talking. Thank you, Nathan. Paige?
Great. Thanks, Kevin, and thanks, Nathan. I'll just go ahead, if okay with all. Good afternoon. Thanks very much for putting that, Kevin, in the chat box. And I also sent it to Nathan earlier this week. It's a brief revenue and budget update memo that I tried to put together. It's also available on our website, and I put it out on the county manager's listserv. So hopefully you've been able to get access to it. And if you joined us for the county manager's call earlier this week, this will be a repeat largely of my comments. And I won't go too in depth on the memo because hopefully it's brief and it will at least provide a little bit of information if you look through it. But what I did was
we're sharing that document right now.
Oh, great.
So thank
you so much.
You can see that on your screen.
Great. I tried to collect the county revenues that would be most impacted by the economic downturn as a result of the pandemic. And I know you all have heard, this is not news to you at all, that the impact will be uncertain. There are a lot of factors that are going to influence how long this downturn lasts, what the recovery look like. In addition, every part of the state is going to experience the recovery at a different rate. Your rebound may take a shorter time or a longer time. You may have a lot of hospitality industry in your area, and your occupancy taxes are really going to, and your sales taxes are going to take a very significant impact. So there really is, I tried to provide some very wide range scenarios as guidance, but in general, the things that I recommended were to, obviously this goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, budget conservatively for sales tax revenues, property tax revenues, these other revenues that are central to county government and local government that will be impacted very much likely in April through June, so the end of the fiscal year 2020. And then going into the new fiscal year, which makes it particularly challenging to budget. You know, over the past few years, you know, you've seen sales tax growth perhaps be forecast to go up several percentage points each year. And while that might, you know, differ again based on where you are in the state and what your economy revolves around, largely you saw some sort of percentage increase year over year. The guidance for fiscal year 2021 is going to be much different. And everything I've read and heard recommends doing a quarter by quarter or monthly projection. So, you know, depending on when these mitigation efforts start to be lifted, and again, you know, that's all going to depend on what guidance we receive and how successful we are in flattening the curve, and if there's an additional pandemic in the fall and the winter. So all of these unknown factors are in play. But, you know, generally have that sales tax revenue be estimated to have a significant drop at the end of fiscal year 2020, and then slowly, hopefully start to rebound so that the decline that you would budget would be less and less every month. You know, on property tax, I think that that's going to be hopefully a little bit less of an impact, although there will still be an impact based on whether or not taxpayers are going to be able to pay, whether or not they appeal, what happens with your tax base in your local government is going to have obviously a big impact on your valuation and what you're going to be able to bring in. So again, I would recommend, you know, budget conservatively, obviously, and budget in a way that applies a quarter by quarter or a month by month approach. I also wanted to mention this idea and this question that we're hearing a lot about of whether or not the July 1st budget deadline date will be amended or will be pushed back. And I think that is often brought up and referred to a lot because there is uncertainty and because all of these factors are unknown, and local governments, they want more time and they need more time to put these decisions into place and to see what the economy does. The guidance that I have been seeing from you know, places like the School of Government and LGC have recommended local governments looking at the interim budget authority and using that in the same way that a pushed July 1st budget adoption deadline would work, and be able to gather some more information and then roll that into the budget ordinance if it's adopted a couple months later or, you know, a couple weeks after July 1st. So I just wanted to mention that that is, we're definitely hearing that, and we're discussing that with the legislature and providing that feedback. But I also wanted to tell you that that interim budget authority is out there, and I'm sure that locals are already considering it and may go that route. And I also wanted to mention that, you know, I said this on the call on Tuesday, I don't have all the answers. Nobody has all the answers. You know, I know we're all trying to figure this out, but please email me or call me and talk to me. You know, I'm no expert, but I try to learn and figure out things. So hopefully I can maybe try to figure it out or point you in the right direction together. And I'm really glad to do that. So thanks for the opportunity, and let me know if you have any questions, and I'll monitor the chat box as well.
Thank you so much, Paige. I'd now like to turn it over to Addison and Jennifer with the League of Municipalities. And we're going to keep Kevin and Paige unmuted as well. So if y'all want to share a dialogue back and forth, you're welcome to do that. We were showing the county commissioner's document. We will also show a document from the National League of Cities at the federal level. So Addison and Jennifer, are you available?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for inviting us to be on this call. We really appreciate it. We want to be in touch with all of you. We want to hear from all of you. And I also want to say thank you very much to Paige is too modest. I've been on a lot of calls with her over the past couple of weeks. And even though I'm not speaking up, Paige, the things that you say are so important. So she's being modest. She does know a lot, and you should email her. And Kevin, we're very appreciative for the work that all of you are doing, and that and how you're backstopping us as well, because it's going to take all of us to try to work through some of these federal issues, which are incredibly impactful. I sit on these federal calls with the White House once a week, and they always say, well, this is federally supported, state managed, and locally executed. And they say they've said that now for 12 weeks. And the local execution is so hard. So thank you to all of you on the call, and just know that your associations are out there working on your behalf. I just wanted to make a couple of points before I turn it over to Addison. Along the lines of, we need your help. It's a good time to weigh in with your state and federal legislatures that Kevin mentioned. We are having, in fact, every Thursday we have a call, Advancing Advocacy and Information Session. And if you aren't getting the League Bulletin, email me, and we'll make sure that you get it, because it has some really important resources. And today we're going to talk about what you can do to help have your voice be heard in that federal discussion that Kevin mentioned. So I hope that, I know you guys have a lot on your plates, but if you could look through that League Bulletin on Fridays, I think you'll find some really important information. The other thing I wanted to let you know is the League is very focused on trying to have some nuts and bolts solutions out there. So it's business as usual for us. Our RMS staff is out there. Our insurance staff is out there. Our HR people are out there. So please, you know, please continue to make use of them. We've actually received a couple of workers' compensation claims based on COVID-19, and obviously that's uncharted waters. We're going to see how that goes. But all of my field staff and the risk management staff are out there to support you with your law enforcement people and your EMS staff and Parks and Rec, everybody, all your really important employees. So we're still here to support you. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was, you probably all have seen it. We did release our revenue report And we've also released a COVID-19 budget survey in partnership with the North Carolina Local Government Budget Association. So if you have seen that and taken it, thank you very much. If you haven't, Addison, we can send the link to Nathan, and people can weigh in on that. And we can also send you the link to the revenue report, which you get every year. But this year, obviously at the very last minute, our research staff, Chris Nida and Caitlin Saunders, went ahead and tweaked it to allow for, for this pandemic, which is obviously affecting us all. So kind of along the lines too, with what, you know, Paige created for counties, we've done the same for cities. And with that, Addison, I will turn it over to you for the legislative end.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. And I hope you guys can hear me okay. Nathan, you got me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you. Go ahead, Addison.
Great. All right. First of all, thank you to our partners at the County Commissioner Association, Kevin Page. Thank you guys for all you're doing, and our legislators on the call. Thank you as well. Just want to say thanks for having me, Nathan, and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Addison McDowell, and I'm a lobbyist and grassroots associate for the League. And I just want to point out that since this pandemic first started, I've been just blown away by the local government leaders that are on the front lines during the crisis, serving people and businesses in their communities. They're fielding questions from all over the spectrum, and at the same time trying to figure out how to combat the widespread impact that this is going to have on their municipality. So one of those impacts is obviously, and has already been stated, is going to be the financial losses that we see coming to cities and towns. So I'm going to hit on a few of those and give you some numbers that our projections have shown. So in terms of sales tax, from March to June of 2019, cities and counties received more than $1.2 billion in sales tax revenue. And we think that a decline in sales of 20% for that period this year is aggressive, but it's certainly possible. And if sales decline by 20%, that would be a $250 million loss in sales taxes for both cities and counties. Further, if sales tax remittance is going to be deferred until July 15th with waiver of penalties and interest, that's $1.2 billion in sales tax revenue that is eligible for deferment. Switching to occupancy taxes, cities alone receive about $50 million in occupancy taxes per year. And if hotel reservations decline by 50%, which might be generous, it could definitely be more. I've heard from some of our members that it's around 85% right now. They're operating at about a 15% occupancy, but that would be at 50%. That would be another $25 million loss for cities alone. Thinking about taxes and tags on cars, I don't have hard numbers on that, but an emerging concern among our members is that people's renewals of their vehicle registrations or their inability or unwillingness to get an inspection these days, or the DMV falling behind in processing checks, et cetera. That's another revenue concern that we have. And lastly, utility revenues. We pulled data that there was nearly $3 billion in utility revenues for municipalities in 2018. And to the extent any of this revenue is deferred due to failure to disconnect or non-payment, this is going to really challenge the viability of many of these already struggling utilities. And so with that in mind, I want to shift to the CARES Act. And I'm sure all of you know that the CARES Act was as complicated as you would expect a bill that includes $2 trillion of funding to be. But the CARES Act seemed to allocate a lot of money to local governments. But as I'm sure you also know, it's to cover COVID-related expenses and not to replace the lost sales tax, occupancy tax, and utility revenues. So our board has written every member of Congress and our two U.S. senators about those losses to ask for help. We need future legislation from Congress to actually provide replacement revenue for cities and towns. At the end of the day, the bill provided little actual relief compared to the price tag in the long run, and it almost incentivized cities to create new spending that would be directly related to COVID-19. We sent an action alert like the county commissioners did yesterday to all of our members as well, asking them to reach out to their congressmen or congresswomen and their senators. And we've been setting up virtual town halls, round tables, and one-on-one meetings with our members and their representatives of Congress. And in fact, we had three yesterday. And so we're really pushing hard on to get our members to reach out to their members of Congress so that we don't get left behind here. But we've also written our state legislators and are working closely with the governor's office. We've participated in one of the working groups as well with my colleague Aaron Winnia presenting to some members of the General Assembly. But in closing, cities are the economic engine of the state. And if they fail or falter, North Carolina is going to have a much longer, more difficult road to recovery than they would otherwise. So Nathan, thank you for your time. I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, thank you so much, Addison and Jennifer. We appreciate that. I was sharing a handout. I think Jennifer might've sent me, it was from the National League of Cities U.S. Conference of Mayors talking about the impact of this on cities across the country. We do, I know, have some representatives of federal legislators on this call. I don't know if they would like to participate, share, but if they would, they can let us know, and we will open it up to them. But we do have several state legislators on this call. I think we have Representative John Aker, Representative Chuck McGrady, Senator Van Dyne, and I think we may have Representative Jake Johnson. So if Representative Aker, are you on the call?
I'm right here, Nathan, out in Fairview.
Thank you, Representative Aker, for joining us. And you've heard the presentation from the League of Municipalities and the County Commissioners. I know y'all are going into session fairly soon. And so if you would like to share anything regarding your priorities or the concerns that you have, feel free to do so. We appreciate you joining us.
Well, thank you, Nathan. What I'm still hearing from my constituents is problems with the unemployment website. And I know everybody's doing all they can to fix that, but that's been a problem.
Representative Aker, are you still on the call?
Oh, sorry. Hit the wrong button here.
Go ahead.
How's
that? You were sharing the challenges with the UI website.
That's right. And I know everybody knows about that. People are also asking about the DMV, which we just heard about is a worry for the municipalities and counties. And I'll just add the partisan comment that, you know, boy, now's the time to figure out a way for us all to get together and expand Medicaid.
Representative Aker, are you still there?
Oh, sorry. Is it not working? I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
You can go ahead.
I'm done.
Okay. Well. Thank you so much. Is Representative McGrady or Representative Johnson on the call? Would y'all like to share anything?
Nathan, can you hear me? This is Representative Jake Johnson.
I can. Go ahead, Representative Johnson.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on. I think this is the first call I've got to join, and I appreciate it so much. You know, I'm with a unique perspective. Prior to being appointed to this seat, I spent 3 years as a chairman of the or on the board of the county commission and 1 year as chairman. So I'm in close contact with the commissioners throughout my district, the three counties, Polk, Henderson, and Transylvania that I have, and trying to talk through them on what the projections are looking like right now. And I will touch on, I know Representative Aker touched on the problems we're having with the unemployment benefits getting to people. And we're taking a system that, and I believe this number is correct as of recently, that was designed to, you know, case have about 3,000 cases per week. And as you can imagine, during normal circumstances, that number would make a little more sense. And now we're looking at a capacity of, in the last 3 to 4 weeks, trying to put close to 500,000 people through that system. So it's one of those things that it was not designed for this. And, you know, I think one of the big solutions is, in a smart, responsible way, getting people back to work. And that's something that we're looking at right now. You know, we're going to hopefully be in close contact with the governor's office going forward, trying to find ways to smartly and responsibly get people back to work. And that'll lighten the load on these systems a lot. We understand that there's vulnerable populations out there, that it's going to be quite some time before we can get back to a normal, schedule and routine, whether it be retirement homes or assisted living facilities. Those are ones we're really going to have to keep a close eye on, even once we move past the worst of this. But there's some industries we feel like going forward, we need to get back up and running pretty quick. I just wanted to touch on North Carolina as far as where we're at budgeting. We were in a really good position to deal with a crisis like this because of the reserves we had on hand. And if you notice, I'm talking a little bit past tense, it's because that money, as much as we have saved, it can't last forever, and we can't continue to lean on that going forward. Just like the counties, we're going to be facing a very significant revenue deficit going forward. And, you know, we need to really start look at how to, how to get back on track responsibly. Those numbers were coming in, and Representative McGrady, being the chair he is there, will probably be able to weigh in on this too. But we had around $1.1 billion in savings. We had about $3.5 billion in unemployment reserves and $186 in Medicaid contingency funds. But when we've got the kind of numbers we see that are looking for relief, We've got to begin to get the economy back on track, because those will be depleted relatively quickly. We understand that the CARES Act has been good. The implementation of some of the programs, as I'm sure a lot of you have talked with people, there's a little bit of confusion, I think, with the banks and administering these small business loans and the PPP especially. Whether that's bank's interpretation or the association, the Bankers Association, I'm not sure, but I think they're getting a lot of those kinks worked out. So hopefully we'll begin to see those programs at least retroactively begin to help out what the businesses have lost and help keep people employed and off of our unemployment benefits system. That's kind of the plan, because you've really got two options. If you're an employer, you can let those people go to where now they're going to have to go get on the state's unemployment benefits plan, which if that's the only option, we have to do it that way. But with the PPP system, what we're hoping is people can stay on that payroll, and they can find work where it is, and then it can be that payroll can be reimbursed through the banks. But like somebody said before, when you're working with that scope of monies, it's often difficult. So at the state, we're planning, I guess, and the Representative McGrady can weigh in as well. We on the economic task force that Chuck and I both sit on, we voted on an additional $25 million yesterday to go to Golden Leaf. The Golden Leaf loans are just for short-term relief. This is not meant to be a long-term plan. This is for short-term, keep the lights on relief. And there was, I don't know the original number that was allocated, but we're putting money in where we can to keep those going or until people can get on the federal loan. So I'll turn it over to if the other representative would like to take it from here.
No, this is...
Is it worth listening?
I don't know.
Senator Van Dyne, Representative McGrady, would y'all like to share with us?
Oh, you turned...
Somebody's getting a phone call.
Sorry about that. That was me. I've got all my appliances connected together. Terry Van Dyne, I just want to echo what everyone else has said. I am actually hoping that we'll be a little bit more aggressive in terms of Golden Leaf and provide more support. I'd like to see a much more robust contribution from the state. to that small business loan program. I think now is the time to be bold. And, you know, we'd also like to see an extension of unemployment benefits. Of course, everybody wants to get the economy open. But to do that, we have to be able to understand COVID-19 better and how it's moving and how it's affecting our community. And we simply don't have the resources to do that right now. The testing equipment, the testing supplies are still, there are still shortages across the state. So I don't want to take too much time other than to say that I'm hoping we can expand Medicaid. I'm a broken record on that, but clearly our hospitals need those resources now, particularly our rural hospitals. More support for unemployment and more support for small businesses. You know, we'll see.
Thank you so much, Senator Van Dyne. Is Representative McGrady on the call? If you would like to share anything. We also have some representative of federal legislators. We had someone in the chat box mention the PPP portal is down due to-
he does a good job. John Ager has his job now. He's an
Is Representative McGrady on the call?
I am now. I just couldn't get, you had me muted. Representative Johnson largely covered what I would have said. We, like the cities, like the counties, don't actually know what our financial situation is going to be with the rollbacks and what the effect of this will be on the budget. It's nice to remember 2 months ago when we were sitting on a huge, relatively huge budget surplus. That is out the door. And at this point, the expectation is that we're looking at maybe upwards of $2 billion shortfall. And so without, again, and I don't usually go here, but it's not real helpful for me to continue to hear that we need to expand Medicaid in the midst of all this. If we want to take on some other funding options, I think those are much more realistic than the continuing mantra regarding expanding Medicaid. It doesn't resonate with a majority of the House or the Senate right at this point. So my view is, even though I support let's get to the issues that we can solve. The House is working in a very bipartisan fashion at this point in time. My expectation that the legislation that will move in about 2 weeks will be largely unanimous. And so that hasn't happened in a while. And I would really urge my colleagues to try to come on board and save the talking points for November.
Representative McGrady and other representative senators on the call could maybe answer this question. We heard about $4 billion through the CARES Act is coming to North Carolina. A lot of that is prescribed, really can't help reduce some of the shortfalls. Do y'all fully understand how those federal dollars are going to be able to benefit the state yet, or is that still a work in progress?
My perspective is that it's still a work in progress. There's a lot of moving parts here, and that's really what we're trying to figure out, is where are the holes and where would be the, you know, best place for us to put money, particularly you know, if there's some matching requirements that we can step up and make those matches. Even in the case of making matches for counties and cities. But I really don't have enough information yet, Nathan, to be able to
to answer your question. I apologize.
Oh, that's fine. I haven't been able to find many good answers, and I don't know if anyone from the league or the county commissioners, I know they've shared a good bit, but I know we'll hopefully get clarity over the next several weeks. I think we still have some federal legislators. Also, Drew Christie with the governor's office. Drew, can you, I think you wanted to share some information regarding the UI claims. Representative Ager mentioned the tremendous backlog, and we know that's a source of frustration with people trying to apply for unemployment.
Yes. While there is has been a tremendous backlog, I do know that the call numbers or waiting times have decreased, and that the process is moving, I wouldn't say smoothly, but better than it was a week and a half ago. And from the period of March 15th through April 15th, there were 617,883 claims filed. And through that time, there was 187,000, almost 187,700 claimants paid, for a total of just shy of $300 million in unemployment insurance, a total, and just shy of $220 million paid in COVID-19 cases. So there is money being distributed at a significant rate, and the state is doing its best with what we have. And as Representative Johnson said, you know, going from 3,000 cases a week to, you know, what is that, 200,000 a week almost. So it's been a significant challenge, but payments are getting out to folks. So I just wanted to share those numbers with everybody.
And I do know from our work on the workforce development side that, you know, there's a significant ramping up of that capability. They're taking about 200 staff from the Department of Commerce on the workforce side that are transitioning to work with Employment Security to address claims. They're expanding their call center. They're expanding their tech capability, their server capability. But, you know, the number of claims has been so large that it's been hard to keep up with that. So, because they're getting 20 to 30,000 claims a day. Are there any of the state legislators want to add anything? Okay. So if any state legislators would like to add anything, is there anyone from the league or county commissioners? Do you have anything else to add? Kevin? Okay. And I apologize for, it's made it a little difficult.
Can you go ahead,
Kevin.
Yeah, and no apology necessary. Having conducted, and like the league, I know we're conducting a lot of phone calls like this, so maintaining the ability to hear is very good. So I appreciate that, Nathan. One thing I wanted to point out, and especially with the members of the assembly on the line, something that really started showing up early on was this idea of somehow delaying sales tax for businesses specifically, or holding sales tax back. We would advocate that would have dire consequences on the localities and local governments. I understand the desire to do that from the business community. And this is one of those, I think, unintended consequences of this situation that you just don't, you know, everybody's hurting. Everybody is seeking a way out of this. But to do that, to take an action such as that, could have some really, I would say, tripling effects that are negative to local governments on their bottom lines. Because what would happen is then you're going to have to lay off folks at the local level or make severe cuts in programmatic things that are mandated that are having to be delivered per statute. And you're talking about public health and social services and things such as that. So I would be remiss if I didn't take the opportunity to say that remark and just raise that issue. So thank you, Nathan, for that.
Is there anything else anyone from the league or the county commissioners would like to add? I apologize. If anyone from a federal legislator would like to share anything? Anything from Senator Burr? Yes? No? Okay. I think we may also have Senator Tillis. I don't know if we have anyone from Congressman McHenry's office. We will certainly share what we've heard on this call with our federal legislators. I know we had Chair Larry Harris of Land to Sky. I don't know if Larry would like to share anything.
Nathan, do I need to, yeah, you unmuted me. No, just thank you. Thank you for your work in pulling the meeting together, and thank you for the participants. It's helpful to get the input. It's helpful at the local level to get the word from all you folks who in all your respective roles. And thank you. Thank you for participating. And Nathan, thank you for your leadership and organizing.
Chairman Harris, is there anything you would like to share from the perspective of the town of Black Mountain or from that y'all are seeing that's a challenge right now?
Well, I think it's just many of the same topics that have come up, but primarily budget. I think budget time rolling in and the uncertainties surrounding the revenue stream are just very challenging. And like everyone else, we're probably just waiting for more information, but certainly we'll be conservative as we can be as we move through the budget cycle.
Mayor Volk from the city of Hendersonville is on the call. Mayor Volk, would you like to share anything? I don't want to put you on the spot, but I guess I am. And I think we had John Connett with the city of Hendersonville as well. Is Mayor Volk or John on the call?
Nathan, this is John Connett. Just thank you. I think it's been great information. I'll echo what Kevin and Jennifer and the folks said that, you know, we all are trying to figure out our budgets and revenue, and just ask that our folks, when they go back to Raleigh, just to keep in mind the trickle-down effect that it has on the local governments. We're trying to work our way through this and keep our folks employed and keep services being provided. But I just thank you for everybody's work.
Well, thank you, John. We appreciate everything that you and the team of the city of Hendersonville, and appreciate Mayor Volt's leadership. If I was trying to look through the chat box, if anyone has any questions that you weren't able to present during this call, you're always welcome to email me at nathan@landofsky.org. That's nathan@landofsky.org, and I will try to share that. We'll try to get answers for you. Also, we will share some of the documents that were on this call on the Land of Sky website. So it's almost 2:00. So if no one else has anything to add, we want to thank Dogwood Health Trust, the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners, the North Carolina League of Municipalities, our state legislators, Senator Van Dyne, Representative McGrady, Representative Johnson, Representative Ager, for joining this call. We were holding these weekly during the COVID-19 crisis, and we hope these are helpful to you. So our next call will be next Thursday. We will have a Land of Sky Board of Delegates meeting next Wednesday at 1:00, and that will be more focused on our local governments and let each of our jurisdictions share the work that they're doing, which we know everyone is stepping up to the plate to serve our community. So we thank you for that. If there's anything we can do here at Land of Sky to support you, you please let us know. And we hope everyone stays safe and has a wonderful day. So thank you for joining this call. And we appreciate your work on our region's behalf.
Thank you, Nathan.